This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to the Eyes on Isles podcast. I had to do this take twice for some reason because my brain just stopped like working for a second there. I was looking at like it's pre, I guess, Stanley Cup playoffs, and I'm like, oh, I'm all excited. But James, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Outside of being flustered that I guess the Stanley Cup playoffs are happening, like the Stanley Cup finals are happening, which I knew was happening. This isn't a new occurrence in my brain.
Yeah.
But outside of that, good. I pulled an epic dad move and I bought my kids a gaming system. I bought a Nintendo Switch.
Dude, okay, that's so funny that you're saying that because yeah. I was just going to tell you that I was, before we started doing this, playing my Nintendo Switch.
Yes.
Because I just bought a new game.
Ooh, what game did you get?
I bought the new Mario Strikers game. It's excellent.
Is it good? I remember it's the excellent. One for GameCube being awesome.
Yep, this one is just as good.
Oh, okay. I don't have it yet. I shelled out $80 for the Pokemon game. My kids love Pokemon.
Oh, so I played that game to its completion as well. It was an excellent game as well. So,
excellent.
Good dad moment for you.
It was excellent. I remember my dad coming home with the Super Nintendo and still remember vividly where I was to this day. Yeah. And so I'm hoping my kids, I've created that kind of core memory for them as well.
That'd be great.
So I guess not speaking of core memories, although this kind of is one where were you when Barry Trotz was fired type of thing. But we're not going to relive that necessarily, but we will be talking about Barry Trotz in so much as what is going on exactly with him, because you're seeing pieces starting to move, and pieces, I mean, like other coaches lining up for jobs. We've already got two being hired. Are both official yet? One is, right?
One is Bruce Cassidy. He gets hired by the Vegas Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. A lot of people had, you know, Trotz tab to possibly go there. There was definitely an interview conducted with Barry Trotz, and I think a couple of days ago, Elliot Friedman, if I'm not mistaken, mentioned that he started to let teams know where he was not going. Mm. He didn't say where he was going yet, but he, according to Friedman, he started informing teams where he won't be. So I'm guessing Vegas was one of them because, again, they yesterday hired Bruce Cassidy, which I think is a good hire for Vegas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, one team off the short list for Barry Trotz. The other guy who was not hired yet, they're hoping for it to happen within the next day or two, is John Tortorella going to the Philadelphia Flyers, most likely.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel. Obviously, I'm not a Philly fan, so I hope he fails to, like, not because I don't like John Tortorella. I met him and I epically respect him, but I want them to fail because I don't want Philly to be good. that does seem like a weird like hire. I feel for the Philadelphia Flyers, because like Torts isn't the guy who's gonna like build this team into a really good one. He's gonna, I guess, lay some good like foundations, and I guess maybe as I speak this out loud, that's kind of what they need. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's one of those let's get a guy who can light a fire under our players' asses kind of thing. But I do know that one player on the Flyers is a big John Tortorella advocate in Cam Atkinson. So he had something to do with it because he played under him in Columbus, went on that pretty decent run in the playoffs where they actually swept the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round a couple postseasons ago. That was when, you know, Matt Duchene was there and Artemi Panarin was there too, right? Yeah, he was there. So yeah,
isn't that Cam the last Atkinson, time the Lightning lost a playoff series?
It might be.
I'm pretty sure. God damn it.
So I think Cam Atkinson was a big advocate for Tortorella to come to the Flyers, and you know, he's one of their leaders in that locker room, so you could see why that transpired. And again, Barry Trotz probably had said to Philadelphia he won't be going there either. Supposedly Philadelphia was very serious about Trotz. It was him or it was him, and if he chose to go there, he had the job, but ultimately, he decided otherwise, and he's going elsewhere. Where he's going, we do not know. However, there was that news that he is a homeowner again in Nashville.
Which is interesting AF, right? Like, I understand he likes being in Nashville, and from what I've heard about people who live in Nashville, seems like a pretty cool place to be. Right. Not a huge country fan, but a big music fan, so I could appreciate that even if I don't enjoy country.
Yeah.
But he obviously likes being there, and it seems like we always would have liked being there, irrespective of where he was, like whether it was at Washington or on the island. You could still own property there and like kind of vacation there in the summer type thing.
Right.
But because he didn't, that kind of tells me like he seems to be eyeing that place, and they have a coach, right?
Yeah, I they do have a coach.
Didn't they just re-sign him or extend Hines type of thing?
Yeah, the thing is with Trotz and Nashville is if he decides to go to Nashville, it's not for a head coaching position. It's for an upper management position. So I don't know exactly what the role is. I don't think it's a general manager. Maybe he'll be an assistant general manager because, I don't know, maybe that's the kind of role he's looking to do next. Needs to learn the ropes, you know, have a mentor, I guess. And maybe Nashville's where he wants to be. Because you figure the Winnipeg Jets job, if it was his, he would have taken it by now. You know, I don't know. Maybe he's still mulling it over. Maybe he's still trying to figure out if he wants to coach anymore at all or be in the game at all right now. So I don't know. It's a bit of an interesting situation because there was seemingly a logjam of other, you know, coaches that are, you know, is Pete DeBoer going to find a spot? Alain Vigneault, Claude Julien. You know, there's all these guys out there and that logjam is even holding up a plethora of, like, I think Darren Driger tweeted this out earlier, like assistant coaching jobs who are in limbo right now. They don't know what's next for them. So, yeah, it'll be interesting because even I heard Jim Montgomery's name come up today as a candidate somewhere. I forget exactly where, but there's
was it Boston? I don't think it was Boston.
Maybe it might have been Boston. You might be right there.
Okay.
So, and look, it's not like these coaching candidates are, you know, just nobodies. These are right. Good coaches. Like, there's a lot of them out there. It's kind of nuts.
Imagine the guys like, this is going to be my year. There's so many openings. And then you see that like list of guys waiting for jobs. And you're like, I am not getting a job this year. Right. Holy crap.
Yeah. It is a very interesting situation as it continues to develop. Seeing Barry Trotz. Somebody had said to me today, because I had saw that, you know, there was an article saying he was a new homeowner, but somebody said that, no, he's always been a homeowner. I don't know.
Like in Nashville, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
I get that he used to live there, but the article just came out via a Nashville newspaper. So I feel like it's a new home. Otherwise, they wouldn't have printed. It's a new home.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we're just like fixating on the news because we got nothing else to like sink our teeth into.
Yeah.
And I think we're all a little bit guilty of that, but it could be like he did buy a new home, but he had a previous home. So this one is new to him type of thing. But you're right. Like you don't write articles like, oh my God, he bought a house. You're like,
right.
He had one. He just upgraded or he didn't like that old one. He got a new one type of thing.
This was like when Casey Cizikas like sold his house on Long Island before he signed with the Islanders, and it was just like people, oh, that's it, he sold his home, freak out, Casey Cizikas is leaving the Islanders.
Yeah, so like he might be there for a general manager position eventually. Like David Poile, 72 years old, has been there in Nashville for 24 years. It might be time for a new voice at some point. He's doing a good job, obviously. We'll see what's going on there. It's just like there isn't a whole lot more going on in the world of New York Islander hockey, so we're doing proxy New York Islanders discussion because there isn't really much more outside of like not even hockey being played. Like we've got this game today, and then they don't play till Saturday. I think is game two, right?
Yeah, they have this is the one time there's a 2-day layoff between games. So
come on, people. Bye. Either way, let's move on to the next one because I think there's a little bit more meat on that bone, if you will.
Sure.
So the next thing that we want to talk about is the goalie, and specifically Ilya Sorokin, because you wrote something this week about how Ilya Sorokin, Igor Shesterkin, And was there someone else? I forget there was someone else.
Andre Vasilevskiy.
Vasilevskiy. They are... Sorokin is in their class. So I want to let you kind of explain, talk that through to people who may not have read it. And if you have, well, you're just going to reiterate what you've already heard. So you'll learn it twice.
Or if you disagreed, maybe, you know, just hear, you know, me speak it out in terms of, you know, what it was that was going through my mind when, listen, it wasn't, you know, something I came up with on my own, right? I was listening to, of course, 32 Thoughts, the podcast with Jeff Marek and Elliot Friedman. And, you know, they were talking about, because the Eastern Conference final just ended, Igor Shesterkin versus Andre Vasilevskiy, and they both put on excellent performances, you know, not just in this series, but in the playoffs in its entirety. And basically they contemplated, like, what's going on? What's with the Russian goaltenders? Like, the pipeline coming out of Russia is pretty freaking great, you know? Vasilevsky's doing real well. Shesterkin's doing real well. And then Marek asks Elliot Friedman, and he says, you know who we're going to have to start talking about next? And Friedman goes, who? Oh, are you talking about Sorokin? And then, you know, Marek says, yes, Ilya Sorokin. And he says, what a treat it's going to be to watch those three face each other on multiple occasions for the foreseeable future, because, you know, they said that Vasilevsky's in a league of his own, right? Mm-hmm. He's the best just because of, one, his accolades, and two, his dominance, right?
Yeah.
But you look at what Shesterkin did this year, and it was Vasilevsky-like, right?
Yep.
The thing with Shesterkin is he needs to continue that dominance in order to be considered just as good. And that's why Vasilevsky's like in a league of his own, right? It's mm-hmm. Vasilevsky in his own tier. And then the next tier starts with Shesterkin. Who comes after that, though, right? Those are obviously the two best goaltenders in the league. And then hold on, wait a minute, pump the brakes. Let's look at the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the numbers, the raw statistics were really good for Ilya Sorokin, right? He was second in the league in, I think, save percentage. He was fourth in the league in goals against average. And he was second in the league in shutouts, which means that he was either above or just below one of the other two goaltenders. And then when you look deeper into the analytics, which I should have pulled it up, but I don't have my article up right now, he's pretty much first in most of the categories in 5-on-5 save percentage, 5-on-5 goals against average, 5-on-5 high danger saves, 5-on-5 high danger saves above anticipated. He's like dominating the league in the goaltending category. It's just not being highlighted. And now, again, same situation as Shesterkin, where he has to continue to prove himself. Of course, Sorokin does too. But in terms of having that conversation, he should be in the mix. I'm not going to say he's the best yet, because, again, you need to prove that over and over, and Vasilevsky has. Shesterkin's time to do so is now, and as is Sorokin's. I understand the Islanders didn't make the playoffs. However, that was...
it was not Sorokin's fault.
That was what, like maybe half a percentage of his fault? Like not even a full 1% Ilya Sorokin's fault?
Yeah, he may like, not he have posted up twice type of thing.
Yeah, like maybe he gave up one or two goals this season where you were like, ah, he might want that one back. But then there was also 50 goals where you said, okay, wow, he should not have made that save, and he did. So, does he deserve to be in the conversation? I absolutely think he does, right? Because it's Vasilevsky and Shesterkin, and then it's Sorokin. Nobody in my mind is better than those three. And listen, at any moment, you can literally flip-flop Shesterkin and Sorokin, because, again, look at the analytics. If you didn't read my article, check it out. He's got, like, pretty insane statistics.
So I think I've got it open here. I'm just going to bring it up on my fourth screen. Come on, fourth screen. Let's go. Oh, no, I closed it. But you had first in... So you pulled up the eyes on the natural stat trick stats for him.
Yeah.
And so what we're talking about here with those is the 5-on-5 stats is he's first overall in high danger save percentage. So this is shots that, like quality shots, you expect these to become goals more frequently than not because yes. They're scoring from like within the slot type of thing.
Yeah.
First, in the NHL at 5-on-5, high danger save percentage at 0.883. that first. So, like, there's no one better. First in high danger goals above average, 1.03. That's stupid.
Right.
And then first in HDGSAA, so high danger goals saved above average, I believe.
Anticipated?
It's one or the other. Yeah, it's 20.75. First. So you stopped 20.75 goals in high danger situations that would have gone in otherwise.
And that's just at 5-on-5. Now, the next paragraph, read what it says about being on the penalty kill.
Well, then it gets on the penalty kill. He's got a 4.76 goals saved above average and a 2.45 expected goals against. 24.5 expected goals against, which ranks him second overall in all goaltenders in each category. And he ranks fourth overall with, again, this is on the PK, high danger save percentage, high danger goals against average, and high danger goals saved above average. Like, this guy is a top four goalie on the PK, which is important, right? Like, your best penalty killer is your goalie, and he is the fourth best in the league to do so. I'm not sure if you filtered those stats for time on ice or anything of the sort.
Yeah, so the it was with 200 or more minutes on the penalty kill.
So when it comes to starters, there are three guys, not even necessarily consistently three guys, right? We're just talking about three other guys who are in his caliber. That's it. That's all when it comes to starters. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I understand the sample isn't super large because we're talking about like a season and a half. But we're not talking about some sort of prospect here. This guy's 24, 25 years old, is Ilya Sorokin? I think
he's going to be 26.
Right? Like, this is him. He's at peak. This is his peak. Yep. This is what we're seeing. And we're like, this is an elite level goalie. It's elite.
We're not just talking about some guy who came up through, you know, the minor league system. And it was like, oh, this guy might be pretty good, right? We're talking about a guy who dominated the net.
Video game numbers around the world,
and then said, okay, I finished my dominance everywhere else. Let me go to North America and finish dominating there.
Right, like we're talking...
And he's doing it.
Yeah, sub 2 goals against average, like almost like what is a 950 save percentage, but I think it was 934 over his regular season career and 940 in the playoffs. Yeah. Yeah, you're going like, well, those are Russian numbers. Yep, 100%. He dominated there, and it's like, what's my next challenge? Comes here, and it's like, you know, what we're seeing there was kind of real. Yeah. Yeah, not like video game numbers here, but elite level goaltending is what we're getting out of this guy. Yeah. And if you have any argument against that, like, look, it's not even just the stats, but the eye test tells you exactly that this guy's elite. He's got his issues, or he's got problems near the start of the year, but he's able to recognize those and fix them quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably just have scheduled the tweet every time the Islanders played, but every time they played, I tweeted out, your regularly scheduled Ilya Sorokin makes a ridiculous save tweet. And right. I sent it every game. It literally happened every game.
You got to find the original one and just keep retweeting it every time.
I know. I do. It's it's insane. He makes seemingly some save that he's not supposed to make almost every night. And yeah, like you said, the eye test is huge there. And you see the athleticism. You see, you know, everything that he does in terms of making sure the Islanders. I mean, let's you know go back to the beginning of the season when Ilya Sorokin. When Semyon Varlamov came back from injured reserve finally, and it took him, what, 9 or 10 games to get his first win? But in that same span, Sorokin was an above 500 goaltender. So it just goes to show you how well he was performing, because it's not like the Islanders were performing bad at that time. Varlamov just wasn't necessarily good to start his season. But when Sorokin was in net, they were winning.
Yeah, if Sorokin gets more run support, if you will, from his forwards, he's a top three Vezina candidate. I'm sure he's in the top five. I'll be stupefied and dumbfounded if he's not in the top five. We know he's not in the top three, but he should have been a top three goalie if his team was better in front of him, which is stupid. That's not how these individual awards are supposed to go. Like, well, how did your team play in front of you? I'm sorry. Is this a team award or an individual award? It's the latter. Base it off the latter. And because they don't, he's not in the top three, which is so stupid. I don't think he should win it. That is definitely up for Shesterkin. Shesterkin wins the Vezina, there's no question. But in terms of top three, Ilya Sorokin has to be there because of what he's done.
Right. I'm with you there. again, like you said, you know, the whole, oh, well, his team didn't make the playoffs argument. It's not about the playoffs. It's about, you know, what did he do in the regular season? Well, he dominated. And if, you know, if when you look at the numbers and you say to yourself, oh, those are really good numbers, where did the Islanders place this season? Oh, they didn't even make the playoffs? Now you're like, holy shit. If that team was good in front of him, how much better would these numbers be?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right? Like, and that's just it. I understand, like, it is a team sport, so your team in front of you is going to impact those individual statistics, just like everyone else, right? You can say, like, Matthew Barzal would have more points if he had a better team with him.
Right.
You're absolutely right. But still, you can judge things on an individual level, and we've got the numbers to show us. On an individual level, Ilya Sorokin is epic. And even if you just want to, like, plug your ears and not look at the numbers, you don't want to talk about stats, cool. When you watch him play, you're going, this guy is like an electric factory. This guy is epic. His post-to-post movement, he's the best bar none. His ceiling of the bottom of the net is flawless. He's got his issues posting up at the beginning of the year, but he fixed that. Just like he did with his rebound control at the beginning of last year. I don't know. I think next year is going to be even better than what we saw this year from him.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. When it comes to, like, you know, looking at the numbers, like, these numbers don't lie. It's like the other article I wrote this week about Zdeno Chara, right?
Oh boy, the you got a lot of flack for that, my friend.
Yeah, bookies.com emailed me and they were like, hey, we measured the most undervalued player on every team based on point share. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I read their work, and Zdeno Chara happened to be the guy for the New York Islanders. So based on points share, and I did in the title specifically say, based on one very specific stat, you know, Zdeno Chara was determined the most undervalued. That doesn't mean he was good. He was just undervalued based on his point share. And I think for his 14 points, each point was worth like $100,000 or something like that. So, and that's basically what it was. That was the sum up of the article. And listen, you didn't have to like it.
Clickbait.
Right, but that doesn't mean it's not true. Just because you don't like it doesn't mean it's not true. He was, by in terms of point share, the most undervalued because he produced more than what his salary, I guess, anticipated him to.
Yeah, like the clickbait thing is the worst. You can disagree with it.
Sure.
Absolutely. When you say clickbait, like, look, we can't fit the whole justification in 140 characters. And if we did, then why do we even write? Just put it on Twitter. Right? Like, let's just put it all on Twitter. I guess it's 240 now, or 260, I think it is. Either way, it doesn't matter. 280. Yeah, there you go. I wish, just like, yeah, we sharing that on Twitter, if that could monetize things, great. But unfortunately, we have to monetize things and milk that out for 300 words. That's just how the industry works. and so, like, the title is going to be clickbaity for everything we write, anyone, outside of maybe The Athletic, because they don't care about Google ranking, is going to be clickbait. And if they're not, then it's unfortunately they're not doing it the right way. I wish we didn't have to do it this way, but that's just how the world is structured. But that's the thing with Ilya Sorokin. Like, the stats are there. The eye test is there. If anyone thinks that he's not an elite goalie in the NHL, I don't know what to tell you. Like, what else are you waiting for? Like, sample size? It's got a year and a half. Like, what else do you want at this point?
I mean, again, you know, look at Shesterkin. He's only been around for a similar amount, right? This was his first year of dominance, right?
Yep.
So, and look, this isn't a Ranger fan hate thing, but a lot of Ranger fans jumped into the conversation and were like, yeah, right, what are you talking about? And like, look, I get it, the rivalry and everything, but you can't just put blinders on because you don't like the Islanders. Like, you have to, again, look at the numbers.
Yep. And we're not saying, like, one is better than the other. It's just, like, they're in the same class.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Well, I'm getting out of my box. Brr, stupid Islanders. And you're like, look, I understand he wears blue and orange instead of red, blue, and white. But they're in the same class because the numbers agree. And the eye test also agrees. So, like, yeah. Just all, another day in the life of being a New York sports fan, right? Like, The last thing that I wanted to bring up is maybe just an update on some of these prospects before we close this sucker out.
Sure.
We have William Zufull, who just captured the MVP of the QMJHL. They decided he was the most valuable player in that league, which is great to see for a kid who's drafted in the fifth round.
Yep.
Awesome. And I know people like, overager. Technically, you're incorrect. He is not an overager. He's a bigger player. That is correct. But, you know, he just did what he was supposed to do. What else do you want him to do? He was a fifth round pick, so I'm not going to look at it too heavily. Okay, fine. But he's also a sixth overall pick at the QMJHL level. So when he was drafted, they thought this kid is going to be something at this level. And yeah, he actually proved them right.
I remember before he was actually drafted, looking at draft rankings, and there was a lot of mixed reviews on this guy. Because I saw draft rankings or mock drafts that had him going like in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a fourth round, and then, you know, I saw a fifth round as well. And that's ultimately where he ended up. But, like, I don't know. Like, he could just have been a diamond in the rough that fell through the cracks, and the Islanders were fortunate enough to scoop him up. And, look, we're not sitting here saying he's going to be, you know, the solution to Barzal's winger issue, but he also maybe could be a serviceable NHLer at some point. Wouldn't you want to be excited about a player who's in your organization, in your pipeline, that's deemed not that great anyway? And, like, this is exciting stuff.
Yeah, you got a fifth-round pick. These are late-round selections, which are, to be fair, darts. You're throwing darts on the board and be like, let's see what happens. And before he even gets to you, he's putting up scoring records and he's winning decorated. Hardware. Yeah. Why are we like, he's overage? Why are we looking for reasons to downgrade that? It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, get excited about what he's done and then be like, all right, now you've got to prove it at the next level. I'm excited for you. I'm rooting for you because I like what I saw, but let's see what you do at this level.
Yep.
And then the last one who wasn't, he didn't win hardware, is Otto Ratu. He was up for the European Young Player of the Year award, and he lost out to Elmer Söderblom, who had a good year himself for Frölunda. Or Frölunda, I don't know how to pronounce it necessarily. T is going to kill me for mispronouncing it. The umlauts on the O really screw me up. I think the umlauts on the O in Swedish make it an A, if I remember correctly, from my lessons from Dia.
Gotcha.
But, he didn't win, which is not the end of the world. Like, it doesn't change anything. We already saw what he did, so I think the hype is already there.
Yeah. Yeah, some had speculated if he can make a push for a roster spot this season. In talking about, I think, I forget what I was reading, but anyway, I think that he'll probably need most of the year in Bridgeport just to continue to get adjusted. It looks real good so far. But you could see him make his debut this year as well. I wouldn't doubt that either. You know, if somebody or a few people are injured and they just give him the call up, let him get his feet wet. But I think majority of the season should be, unless he like really just, you know, takes off and blows everyone out of the water. But I don't anticipate that happening. Eventually, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's going to be, like Lou says constantly, that there's such a thing as bringing a prospect up too soon, but there isn't such a thing as bringing them up late. So they're going to take their time with him. Like, they like what they've seen, and so they're going to take their time. I think he's going to spend the year regardless, right? Like, even Simon Holmstrom was doing well. They didn't give him a call-up necessarily. Yeah. I think they're going to kind of do the same thing with him there.
Do you anticipate him being on the roster next year?
Simon Holmstrom?
No, on Otto Ratu. Meaning, like, do you anticipate him remaining an Islander, I should have said.
Oh. Like, in either Islander, either the pro or under-pro Islander.
Right. Will he be involved in one of those hockey trades, do you think?
I hope not, just because I've been following him around. I don't want to stop following him, although I guess I'll still follow him regardless of where he goes. but, yeah, I kind of... I'm getting myself ready for him leaving, is what I'm thinking of.
Gotcha.
You?
I don't know. It really depends on the player.
Mm.
We often look at the obvious guys, you know, like we've talked about the Fialas and the Chikrins and whatnot, but I don't know what a trade looks like outside of those players who are have been named already to be available. Like, if we're not even talking about the guy who Lamoriello is eventually going to, acquire, obviously we don't know what the price tag is going to be. So
of course, yeah,
we know those hockey trades are going to happen. At the same time, you hope that Ratu stays. You know, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. And that's why I'm a big advocate for Fiala, because, again, I think that, you know, the less is more route in that direction, because I think that they can get him for something that's not going to cost them an arm and a leg. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's what Lou's going to do. He's going to do his due twice.
You got it.
I got it. I think he's going to do his due diligence. I said due twice, but spelled differently, to make sure that he's bringing in the right guy at the right price.
Yeah.
But he's not running out of time, but I am worried that he's going to take too long to do so, and then he's going to have to pick someone up and pay maybe a price he didn't want to, type of thing.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, that's typically been his approach, right? If you have time, you use it.
Yeah.
However, we've already seen him be aggressive, not even waiting like a week after the season was over to fire Trotz, hire Lambert. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the changes are already underway. So it might be a summer where he gets out of his own comfort zone and speeds the process up a little bit.
Ooh, comfort of discomfort for Lou. Summer of discomfort. There we go, for Lou.
Yeah.
I like it. Maybe I got to do that. That's going to be my summer motto, summer of discomfort. it's going to be real hot, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that was it. Is anything else you want to bring up before we sign off?
I think we covered everything. That was a pretty good, quick episode there.
Yeah, well, that's all right. We're at 31 minutes. That's okay. We don't need to keep these super long. So
if you want to hear more,
you
know where to go.
That is patreon.com/eyesonisles, baby. So you get 3 podcasts a week, plus a weekend chat with me on Sunday where I just log in and we can talk about whatever. Last week I talked to Bill and Ryan about... who do we talk about? We talked about another team and their cap situation. I think the Rangers, maybe. Because why not? And so you get that. You get obviously a mailbag, so that's another podcast on top of that. So 4 plus a Discord to hang out with like 120 some odd Eyes on Isles fans or Islanders fans who just want, they crave that interaction. And there are a bunch of buttes in there. So get there, patreon.com/eyesonisles. You can get our writings and everything that we say in written form at eyesonisles.com. You can get us on Twitter at TLOMitchesMe. You are?
At James Nichols, NYI.
Love it. And then you can also get us on Facebook. So it's facebook.com/eyesonisles. So one more episode done, sealed, recorded. James, I can't wait to do the next one next week with you, buddy.
Yep. See you then.